Have you ever wanted to discover what's missing in your life? Metaphysics is available to all and is part of your life even if you don't know it. Welcome to Metaphysics, a view through the veil with Barb Crowley. Together we'll explore the mysteries behind metaphysics and how to use it to have a deeper understanding and advantage in life. And now here's your host, Barb Crowley.
Hi, this is Barb Crowley, and welcome to Metaphysics, a view through the veil. Today we're talking to Dr. Frederick Woodard. He has 3 master's degrees in different areas of psychology and a PhD in clinical psychology. He is also a licensed psychologist and certified hypnotherapist. He was New England Paranormal Researcher of the Year for 2012 from CC Productions. He was voted Hypnotist of the Year in 2021 for Merrimack, South Eagan Valley Regions of New Hampshire Chamber of Commerce. Honorable mention in 2019, 2018, 2017, Healthcare Professional of the Year 2023, Podcast Business News Network. Quite accomplished.
Yes.
What drew you into supernatural experiences?
They were what drew me into psychology.
The paranormal? So tell me about this.
Well, it was sort of like... I understood people had experiences and I wanted to understand them better, and I wanted to be able to advance my own awareness. And how do you do that? You do that by becoming part of a system that it looks into those things. So I also, I feel like I'm a pioneer. So I kind of wrote 2 books about things that hadn't really been written about. Like my first book is Perceptual Hypnosis. And it was a phenomenology of that Donald Snaig in the 40s had suggested, but hadn't done it.
Mm-hmm.
Really done it.
This one's developing your supernatural awareness. Which is connecting with an interactive universe.
Yes.
But your first one, tell me your first one again, because that got you.
Perceptual hypnosis, a journey to expanding your awareness.
And tell me about that a little bit. I don't have that book.
Well, there's a CD in the back that helps people wake up if they need that. And it kind of gives everything you need to kind of work through stuff. And it's a book that's got a bunch of different chapters in it on hypnosis. And I wrote that book a little differently than I wrote this one. I wrote that book both for the professional and the client. And I wrote this book for the client.
Oh, okay.
For the person, the individual, the reader.
Mm-hmm. And did you get into the supernatural in that book too?
A little bit.
Right. But you saved most of it for this one, huh?
Yes. It was all the interviews that I did, the cases that I put in.
And you interviewed over 50 people?
Yes.
How did you find those 50?
I put an ad in the paper and the new local newspapers, and people started calling. And then I picked the people that had met the criteria to, meet, like they had an inner experience and then it happened in the external world, or they had a transformative experience that changed them, not who they were, but how they responded to the world after that. And I used those as examples, for the cases that I presented.
How do you know they were telling you the truth?
Well, there was always evidence of it. For example, the insurance document woman, she and her sister were looking for their father's insurance documents after he passed, and they couldn't find him, and they'd finally given up, and she lay down to go to sleep at night in her bed. And she smelled her father's cigar smoke, which they didn't make anymore. And then she looked all up and she saw her father standing there. And he told her, they're in the coin savers. You'll find the insurance documents in the coin savers. And sure enough, that's where they were.
Talk about a practical people, that practical ghost.
Right. And then I had I had another woman, the woman with the dolphins. She went down to Florida for some medical tests. And when she was down there, she went out to the water. She got out in the water and she got herself far enough away where she was near the pole that like you shouldn't go any farther. Mm-hmm. And she started singing and imagining she was attracting dolphins. And she waited for the dolphins, but they didn't show up. So mm-hmm. she started to go in. And when she turned and went in, people were standing up and looking. And she turned around and there was the dolphins by the pole where she had been singing.
So she just didn't wait long enough, huh?
Yeah.
Right. And these are the examples. The examples you went to look at were not as much parapsychology or psychic as much as they're both. And they're supernatural. Are the interconnectedness. And, yeah.
Right. And the supernatural, what I mean by the supernatural is it's not explainable by science as we know it.
Right. And that's what you call supernatural awareness. I think in
supernatural experiences, yes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And supernatural awareness is waking up to that. And in each chapter, I put examples at the end of exercises people can do to wake up a little more.
What's got you going was the interconnectedness of the of the worlds, of the universes. What word is there for that? Interconnectedness of what?
Of the universe. I call it the universe because the universe involves everything. It's more way beyond just Earth. Mm-hmm. It's way beyond just our galaxy. It's whatever exists, which we don't completely understand at this point.
Although quantum theory scientists are starting to talk about consciousness being everywhere.
Right.
Yeah, I had a guest actually say that he no longer goes to the mystics. Now he goes to the scientists. Because the scientists are now into what the mystics were into before. Which is fabulous. So you actually saw the interconnectedness, or what really kind of broke open your soul to say, wait a minute, there's more here. What's going on?
Well, one example was I was in the Concord State Library and mm-hmm. I was doing genealogy. I was trying to find a connection between one of my grandfathers way back, like grandfather 5 and grandfather 6. And they were living in Pittsford, Vermont. And I couldn't do it. And this was my last place to go, the last thing to do. And as I was doing that, there was three old men sitting in a corner talking to each other, but you could only hear mumbling. And as I turned around to go the other way, one of the guy's voices in my head said, check the land deeds. So I went to the Mormon church in Nashua and I got, I ordered copies of the land deeds for my family for that time period, which was the late 1700s. And there was a land deed that literally was acknowledged my grandmother, widow Mary Woodard, because her husband was murdered, and mm-hmm. And her son Amos Woodard, and literally said the relationship, which is incredibly rare. So what it was to me was something happened, and then I checked it out, and it was real.
Mm-hmm. And that sent you for 3 degrees in psychology. Wow.
Well, no, I got the degrees because I wanted to. I got the first one because it was what I wanted to learn from the school. And then I realized I needed more clinical, so I went for my second one. And mm-hmm. then the third one was part of my PhD. I had to do it because they were APA approved and the other schools weren't necessarily. Mm-hmm. So they kind of, so I had three. but they were in all different areas. And the two things that were common was my PhD program, where I had got the third master's, and my initial program both had phenomenology and humanistic stuff involved in their work, mm-hmm. which was wonderful.
And methodology as you went for as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a method.
Yeah. So once the, because this doesn't happen to everybody, it only happens to some people. And in your case, you happen to have a psychic connection. You happen to be open to that information having come through to you.
Yes.
But not everybody has that. Yeah.
Right. And in little ways. And then what I do in my book is each chapter has like themes, the major theme, like which is out of the blue or first thought that comes to your mind, altering time and space. And then in the book, there's details, and the details are used to write exercises at the end of the chapter to help people open up so that they can be more open to having an experience, or if they've already had an experience, to be able to connect to some of those stories in the book.
Why do some people have it and some people don't?
I don't know.
No,
I'm
you
not
never...
sure.
Right.
I'm not sure. I think some people are more aware. It may be past lives. I'm not sure. It may be the other existences or other times or what they came in with. You mm-hmm. know, I worked with a girl one time, and she was like 12, and she had incredible empathy, which neither her mother nor her father had any mm-hmm. of. So she came in with that.
Now, did you ever regress your clients, your patients?
No, not necessarily. No, I just took their stories. I did that with one woman where we went back to her experience and in the research areas. And that was good. That was really helpful to her.
Mm-hmm.
But there was stuff that we couldn't do. For example, I told her to step out of herself and step away and look down at the experience. And she said, they won't let me.
Did you ask her who they were?
Oh, they were the UFO people that had taken her.
Oh, okay. So that in that case, it was a UFO abduction that she was reliving.
Right, from a playground.
Yeah. And did you... What did you find out about UFOs? And
I'm not an expert in those areas. And what I did find out was that people had these experiences, and they were real for them. Like some of them, people just saw an object up in the sky, and that was sufficient to alter their reality. And some people had missing time. Like one woman talked about how she came out, her husband called her, that there was something up in the sky. They were near an airport, and she went out, and then she had all this missing time, and then she woke up and she was in a different spot. Than she was originally.
Yeah. But is there any proof to UFO versus amnesia? You know, or an amnesia. How did you get over there?
Well, I don't know about that. The point is, there's stories that people tell me which really do transform them and change them. And for example, in that case, it was the mm-hmm. idea of the missing time.
Right. When you interviewed these people, or when, you know, you picked your 50 that you were going to interview, what were they based on? What was that based on?
The situations that there were an internal experience and an external experience later, or there was a transformation within that person. For example, I interviewed one woman in her 70s, and when she was young, in her 20s, she had wanted to die, and she wanted to bring her children with her. She had two sons, and she talked about going to the laundromat and wanted her husband to go with her, and he wouldn't because he had stuff to do. And so she went to the laundromat, and then she said, "Oh, good, there's a man in there. I'll be safe." She went in there, and he knocked her out cold, and she had a near-death experience. Wow. And he raped her. And he raped her. And when she went to the light, the person she knew at the time but couldn't recall later, she said, told her that she could go, but she would have to redo her whole life again, and that she couldn't take her children because they had other things to do. And that transformed her. She had no desire to die after that, no desire to want to leave. She wanted to finish her life, and she wanted to support her children. And she did that the rest of her life. And when I met her, she had no suicidal ideas or anything.
Wow. So that's the methodology in picking. So it's something that changed him internally and externally.
Yes. And the idea is that there's always a transformation in the person, or there's an internal event and an external event that validates it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Give me an idea of some of the others.
Well, there's lots of different people. It's just a matter of who we're going to talk about.
Well, are there groups or there patterns? And
yes,
and
each chapter has a pattern, and the chapters are altered by the pattern. So each chapter, like there's time and space.
Mm-hmm.
One of the chapters, I talked to people that had feelings. They felt the something that made them feel that person was present. And one person had chills that she would always feel when her mother was around, and talked about that and had an experience of that when she went to visit an aunt. And another person another person talked about how they had feelings, like when they were sitting talking to me, they said, like, "I feel you. I can sense what you feel," mm-hmm, like. And when I used to meet with my great aunt and uncle, I could feel them. I could sense their presence. I felt who they were just as much as I can tell who they are. And she said that when they came to visit her another time and they had passed, she felt them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I talked about at the end of that chapter, like feeling, like for the day, just try to feel things. Don't mm-hmm. think things. Don't see things. Try to feel them or think them, but not see them. Don't use your vision. Use your feeling. And that's an example of trying to open people up with stuff that came from the chapter.
The people that you interviewed, they had things that happened to them. Did you work with people who were more proactive? You know, would you know, could make it happen rather than receive it? Do you know what I mean?
Make it happen.
So, you know, well, let's say a psychic will sit down or a medium will sit down and call somebody in to talk to them, you know, and that's a very deliberate thing.
Yeah, that one I wasn't working with. I wasn't doing that.
So you were working with people that these things happened to them, and you were interviewing them.
I had an experience once when I was an undergrad in college, and I went to a psychic clinic, and it was also psychological. So there was a psychologist there, and there was also a medium and a hypnotist and all those different people there. Mm-hmm. And so they were talking about this Black woman who was very gifted and older and very gifted. Mm-hmm. And this woman that was in her 40s, I was like 20. was in her 40s, said if I wanted to drive down to her house, it was really close to her house, we could have dinner. She would give me a free reading, and then we could go over to the house. Mm-hmm. Well, I went down there, and she tried to make passes at me the whole time, and I didn't want that. And, yeah. And so we went over to the medium to see the medium. Mm-hmm. And the woman went upstairs, said, where's the bathroom? Upstairs. So she started heading upstairs and she went, oh, my God, a nail went through my shoe. And the reader turned around and wheeled at her and said, that was a warning. You're never supposed to use spiritual knowledge for personal gain. And then she looked at me and she said, that was for you to witness. Not like good boy, but don't you ever do that.
Wow. That's and, that's talk about getting to the heart of things, huh?
Right. And so that was my experience with what you're talking about. But that wasn't something that, you know, was an interview.
Mm-hmm. And how was the medium? Did she call anybody in for you?
She was very good. Yes, she was very good. Yeah. She actually talked about why I was working in a prison as a guard. And she talked about how I had my uncle looking out for me. And mm-hmm. And he how she even knew that my uncle had died in the war was amazing.
Right. So she was actually talking to your uncle.
Possibly, yes.
From the other side, yeah. When you're looking at the supernatural awareness, or mostly the interconnectedness between the universe, I want to say between the worlds, but you say in the universe. Why did you not go to people who actively did it? Why only interview people who had what I call psychic hits or things that happened to them?
Those are the people that responded to me at the beginning. And then mm-hmm. I just kept it that way, because to work with somebody that's telling me, I had one person that came to me that I did include her story in there, or, and I don't remember it right off the bat in my mind, but she was a medium. She was somebody mm-hmm. that was teaching that stuff to people. And I included her story because it was quite relevant. But it wasn't based on those things. It wasn't based on whether or not they would come. But most people that are gifted don't come.
You mean to be tested? You mean? Oh, okay.
Right. To be interviewed, because they're working with people themselves.
Mm-hmm. But you had a methodology, and this might be it too. You had a methodology of interviewing to make sure not to feed information, you want to explain that?
Well, yeah, I didn't give people information. I took information from them. So mm-hmm. they told me their story and I just listened. When I asked questions, they were open-ended questions. They weren't judgmental questions. There was no words that were used that would imply something.
Right. That is a big thing, not to feed people information.
Right.
The people that you talk to, it changed their lives, like the woman in the laundromat. These things changed their lives completely.
Yes, it changed their lives many times. Yes.
Right. Did any of them change your life?
Well, at the beginning, when I first started doing this, and I was on my training sessions and my internship and my postdoc, and people would tell me stories, and they'd say, "I've never told anybody this," and those would really get to me. I'd be like, "Wow, that's really amazing. That's incredible. That's and you never told anybody this." Mm-hmm. And I was, yes, it really did help me learn to respect those experiences.
Your psychology business, your healthcare program, when you met with people, did it become most people came to you, were coming to you with these kind of stories because you could accept them? They could open up to you?
And not necessarily. I'm not talking about your researchers. I had a lot of straight clinical cases where mm-hmm. people had fears and anxiety, depression, bipolar, PTSD, and we worked through those, simply worked through those things.
Right, as a psychologist.
Yes.
But knowing that the world was so interconnected, the universe, why not go there? Why not take a look at why do you have these anxieties?
Because those would be, that would be up for that person to do. And, mm-hmm. and when they don't do that, I don't do it. I don't do it for them.
Okay. So nobody said to you, can we look at past lives? Can we look at, where is this anxiety coming from?
When somebody does that, it's different.
Yeah. But it wouldn't be in your practice.
Well, it's in my skills, but it's not something that's part of insurance or something like that or healthcare.
Well, no, you could never put this down on insurance form. Yeah, you're right.
Right. It's not that part. That part it would be independent of that, mm-hmm. so it would be free of that.
Right. Right. So your book really is helping people to develop their skills in seeing the interconnectedness of the universe.
Yes, hopefully.
Right. And are you able to at will see that?
Sometimes I can. Sometimes it all depends. You know, I've had experiences in my life, but they're little ones. They're not huge ones.
Yeah.
You know, I was an undergrad in college, and I remember going to the store to buy a soda and thinking about my uncle and saying, well, maybe my uncle's really not there. Maybe that's just all BS and, you know, mm-hmm. it's not really true. And then I went and got my change, and in my change was a World War II nickel. And those are very hard to get. Those are incredibly difficult to get. The chances of getting one is a million to one.
Mm-hmm. So you took that as a loan from your uncle.
Well, that was kind of like a don't judge. Just wait for the time. Wait and see.
Yeah, be passive.
I forgot the name of the movie, but it was with Demi Moore and
Ghost.
Yes. And there is a scene where he stops the friend of his that was trying to kill the Demi Moore and the other woman that was the medium.
And, Whoopi Goldberg, wasn't it?
Yes, yes, yes. It was.
She was great in that. Yeah.
Yeah. And when he did, the guy died because the glass came down and killed him. And then he stepped out of his body and he looked over and he saw him and he said, oh, my God. And then he just shook his head and the demons came and took him away.
Yeah, that's what everybody's afraid of here, isn't it? You know, on Earth. Are there demons?
Well, it's not necessarily that, but it's that something else is going to happen and mm-hmm. wait for that thing to happen and see what happens then. If nothing happens, then all we have is what we shared here.
Right.
And help people that are living to maintain that.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm going to take a break right now and we'll be right back. And I want to talk to you about your paranormal experience as well. And then we'll come back and talk about the book and the exercises and all. Okay?
All right.
We'll be right back.
Follow Voice America at facebook.com/Voice America for juicy updates from your favorite radio shows and podcasts.
One thing's for certain, life is uncertain. Do you navigate the unknowns? Visit aviewthroughtheveil.com to sign up for psychic readings and classes with Barb Crowley. You can schedule one-to-one sessions with Barb for personal and relationship counseling, pet communication, mediumship, career and business direction, or sign up for one of her classes. Everyone has answers through the metaphysical plane, but they need help to access them. Get the help you need today. Visit aviewthroughtheveil.com.
When there is a war on talent, you have to go to combat. What is Career Combat? It's a show that airs at 7 a.m. Pacific time on Fridays on the Voice America Empowerment Channel that acts as your destination for real career talk and real career advice. Hear from the best and brightest in the biz as your host, Kelly Combat, gives you the answers you need. Career Combat, Fridays at 7 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Empowerment.
Find out what makes the most successful people tick. Keep listening to the Voice America Empowerment Channel, voiceamericaempowerment.com.
You are listening to Metaphysics, A View Through the Veil with Barb Crowley. To reach the live show, please call in to 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to aviewthroughtheveil@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we're back with Dr. Frederick Woodard. And we were just talking a little right before we came back about his paranormal article that he had written, and I stopped him. I wanted to make sure that everybody could hear about it. So you want to tell us about that?
There was a paper I wrote for this Psychological Reports back in 2012, and it was, I can't remember the exact title, but it was about spiritual experiences that people shared, paranormal experiences. And one of the stories in the article is a story about a woman that was a bartender, and she hugged a friend of hers that she'd never met her friend's husband or anything, and said, "Oh my God, he's going to kill her." And she didn't have any way of being able to prove that, so she couldn't call the police or anything. There was no issues around that. And then she said that 2 weeks later he did.
Wow, wow. How did she feel about that? How did she ever get out on that? You know, she felt horribly guilty about it.
She didn't feel guilty, but she felt like she wished she had could have done something.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah,
but she couldn't because she never even met the guy. She had no information that would suggest that he would do that.
But why didn't she tell the woman? He's going to kill you.
Because there was because
she didn't trust it.
Right. She didn't know.
Yeah.
And then it happened. And that's what I mean by things
happening.
Out of
happening. The blue? Is that out
things
of the blue?
Happening. Well, that could be out of the blue, or that could be the first thought that comes to my mind. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like something different than what you were thinking. And but that experience, that woman, she went through the whole experience with me, and I was the first person she ever told.
Really? Now, why is it that they would tell nobody? They already knew that you would accept it, right? That you and that's why they told
possibly.
Right. And they didn't tell anybody else
because I accept some things, but things that aren't true I don't accept. And I can find out those things because people are inconsistent. They'll say one thing and then they'll say something totally different. And that's not real.
And how long did you interview them for to find out if they were consistent? Or did you come back to them?
There were several interviews. So people that told me the genuine stories were consistent throughout what they said and what they did.
Mm-hmm. Did you interview people around them too, or just the person?
Just the person. I didn't need to interview anyone else.
Right. And that's a methodology we had talked about earlier.
Right.
To make sure. So the thing is, people get, I call them psychic hits when you're calling them out of the blue or the first thought. You know, and what do people do with things like that? Like with that woman, she didn't know what to do, so she didn't. And then 2 weeks later,
She couldn't. She had no justification. There was no information that she could utilize to validate that.
But she knew it was true. Somehow she knew it
Well,
was true.
she didn't know it was true till it happened, but she had the thought. The thought came in and it was like real for her, and but she couldn't do anything about it.
But where do you think that thought came from?
I'm not sure because the idea is I don't try to go beyond what I know. And sometimes those thoughts can come from greater beings. Maybe gods or goddesses or whatever is the ultimate power that gives us information. Sometimes I think that can happen, but you have to have validation for that later, to justify it. You can't, or the sad part is sometimes things can change and then they don't happen, but that's another story. That's a different story, but I haven't had any of those that I wasn't doing any of those.
Yeah, and nobody will remember. You know, I mean, if it hadn't been validated, she may never even remember that thought. You know, and that's the thing with that. Do you think things can change, or do you think once you get a psychic hit like that, is it always true? And then things can change, or is it just, you know, true, not true?
Well,
You know what I mean? It's,
an
yeah.
analogy would be The Matrix, the first movie, and when he got to the end and he met the guy that was behind the screen and all the different versions of him that had tried to succeed and didn't succeed.
Yeah. Yep. The
But he
Matrix.
did. But he did. But he did succeed in making changes.
What did you, women, I kind of was going to jump to something else. I don't want to go there yet. Tell me about the interaction with external influences, external creatures.
Well,
Like you interviewed
there
some
was
people
one
with that.
person that was a cleaner in a healthcare facility, and she saw a black blob, which she also saw at her boyfriend's house and at a site that they went to investigate.
Was she a paranormal investigator or?
No, not necessarily, but she was open to do things. She stayed outside when they went into a like a construction site. She stayed outside and saw the creature again.
And what was the creature? It was just a blob. Why did
I
she
don't
call it?
know.
Why did she call it a creature, though?
She didn't call it a creature. She called it a what it was, what a blob.
And did she always see it? So that blob traveled with her.
Little bit. She didn't see it again after that. She said just those few times, and then that was the only time she saw it. But it made her aware that there's more in the universe
Than what we know.
than what we just think we know.
How does that change the person, knowing that the world is so much bigger? Is it frightening? Is it comforting?
It depends on the person. It can be frightening sometimes, and I think it can be comforting to some people to realize there's more and it's different.
Different for different people?
Well, it's different depending on who you are. Everybody has different, unique experiences that justify things. Like the insurance document, that only mattered to the woman. The woman and her sister, that didn't matter to anyone else. That's all that mattered to.
But it changed. Did it change her perception, or was she already aware that there's life after death?
Well, it changed her perception of what was possible.
Had she told anybody else that story or just you?
I don't know. That one, I don't.
Right. Right. What about perceiving unexpected beings and objects?
Well, that would be like a person seeing a UFO. There was a little girl that saw a UFO, and she told me the story. She was a grown woman, and she talked about how she saw it. She went and sat down in her chair where she usually relaxed, and her dad was working in the garage on a car, and then she saw this object, and it was huge. Huge, just sitting there in the sky. And she ran to get her father. She said, "Dad, come. You got to come quick. You got to see this." And when he got there, there was nothing.
Wow. Did she? But she never questioned it, that she had
seen that. Yes, she never questioned that she'd actually seen that. She didn't question that.
Right. But that stayed with her for her entire life, that there's more here.
Yeah.
So knowing that there's more out there, what does that do for us?
Well, what I do is just try to help people open up, because mm-hmm. it's a process of opening up that allows you to have an experience so that you can become one of those people that is more open mm-hmm. and more aware of what's going on around you. I can make a bad analogy, but I was walking with a professor friend of mine and my two German shepherds, and he was busy talking to me about what mattered to him, and my dogs were busy sniffing the ground, and up about 150 yards ahead, there were two bobcats that crossed our path, and they just kept going up into the woods, and I noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say anything to anybody, but I noticed that.
Right. Right.
And so I was aware of more that was going on. And another example was when I was in my mentor, Dr. Ann Cohn Richards, from the University of West Georgia. I wrote a paper in her class and she suggested I publish it, and I sent it out to a publisher, and they tore it to shreds, sent it back to me. And I said, "No, I'm not a good writer." And she said, "Let me see that. Oh no, this is political. Send it to a different journal." And I got it published. And not only did I get it published, but when the head of the journal that rejected it, the first one, yeah. tried to write an article against it. And they said, "You need to first acknowledge that three experts in the field said this was something that contributes to the field," and then sent me a copy of it.
So this is a trade journal.
It was a journal of psychology,
okay,
psychological
yeah,
reports,
yeah.
and right. The thing was, I was going to talk about was that there was this movie that she put on, Dr. Cohn Richards, and she put this movie on, and the movie was about this guy, and it was showed his mother, him being in the living room, his getting a ride to work from a taxi driver, the secretary, his boss, all these people's versions of him. And then when it was all over, she said, "What was he holding in the living room?" And I was one of only three people that got it right.
That notice.
It was a pencil. It was a pencil. Everybody else had cigarette or nothing or something else. But it was I was one of only three people that got it right. And there were over 30 people in the class.
Wow. So you perceived, you caught that. You perceived it. Yeah.
Right. So, but that's just regular stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We talked a little bit at the commercial that the younger people are so much more open to accepting that the world is larger and more diverse than what we can see. But I'm seeing even older people are more accepting. Any idea
yes,
why?
I think it's because it's more acceptable.
Mm-hmm. But why
is
it?
Your show is on.
Right, exactly.
And people listen.
Yeah, yep.
And if you didn't have the show, mm-hmm. and all these other people didn't have their shows, then all these people that are gaining benefits from listening wouldn't be able to do that.
Right. And it is, you're right, that people are more open and more curious and want to learn. And with what your book will help with, want to learn how to do it, want to learn how to open up to it.
Right. And if not, if either open up to it with the exercises at the end of each chapter through 2 to 9, or have another someone else's experience to connect to in detail that would go, oh, yes, that was what I experienced.
Mm-hmm. What are your 12 takeaways?
Some of them are
12 that, key takeaways.
Some of them are that the supernatural experiences can happen anywhere. They can happen to anybody. So that could be a person that's Christian, Muslim, no mm-hmm. religion, you know, there are aspects of the supernatural experiences, such as an animal or smell, is often connected to a significant event in the person's life. Key details of supernatural experiences are often validated by external information.
By finding the insurance documents, you mean?
Right. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. Then there's stuff like people fear that somebody's going to call them crazy or that they're losing their mind. And then there's people that want to find somebody that had a similar experience. Those are some of them. I'm not going to go through all single one.
And you told me that you started to gather information for this book a long time ago. It wasn't,
right.
And you've kind of just gathered information over, 20 years or something?
Yes, about that, yes.
Have you seen the change in people being more open?
Yes, I think people are more generally open. There's always some people that aren't.
Right, and those are your skeptics?
Those can be skeptics, but those are people that are sometimes fearful of having an experience because they don't know what it'll do to them. Or a skeptic is probably somebody that hasn't had an experience, has nothing to relate it to. And I make an analogy, a bad analogy again, back in time when there was no video cameras or cameras or any technology to take pictures of stuff so that we could share our experience like we're doing.
Uh-huh.
Someone up north would come down south and say, well, it snows up here, up there, you know? And right. The person would have no way of knowing whether that's true or not. So they'd either have to imagine it and say it's true or mm-hmm. say that person's lying.
Right.
And they're not telling the truth
because
they'd have no other way.
Most people would accept it as truth, right?
Nowadays, yes. Think about back in the day.
Right.
Would it be something that somebody would do that had no experience with that? None at all.
Well, there was a lot of religion. There was a lot more religion 20 years ago than there is now. And don't you feel like religion kind of shut it down to a certain extent?
Well, it all depends. I mean, it's not necessarily true, and it depends on the religion, too. It's like some religions are very open to experiences and some aren't. And so it's a very unique experience. And I think that religions, in some cases, way back in time, they did something valuable for human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, You know, way back in time when they said, no, you can't have sex with your niece or your nephew. Well, yeah, there was good reasons for that.
Right.
You know, or you can't eat this food. You can't eat this food because that this will go bad and this could kill you. And, you know, the religions, the Jewish faith, the Christian faith, some of the other ones, they had rules like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where they did things to try to protect people and make life a safer place for those people.
Right. It was a lot of health then and survival, really. But it was also kind of trying to keep control that only information could only go through certain people, certain ordained people, certain, you know, people were more special than other people, kind of thing, you know.
It's also another point, too, that in the 12 findings is that sometimes it's difficult for the individual to put their supernatural experience into words.
Mm-hmm. Can't explain it.
It's hard to explain sometimes. There's certain aspects of it that they can explain, but then there's other pieces that they can't.
But people, I know with near-death experiences, 50 years later, their experience, you know how most of us with memories, they kind of change over time? Well, these don't
Those don't change. Yes, that's true. That's very true.
Yeah, which
that's very true.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
Because they're so unique.
But not
they're
traumatic.
They're so different.
Not traumatic.
Well, not necessarily, but they're so different that you can possibly forget it.
Or forget the details of it. Yeah.
Right.
Right. What is your takeaway for you from all of this, though? You know, that everything's interconnected. How has it changed your life?
Well, it just makes me realize that there's a lot more going on than I can even begin to fathom. And to be open to those experiences and realize those things can happen. I know when I was really young, I was in an undergrad in college, and I went out with my cousins one night. We went out dancing, and I had to drive 50 miles to meet them. And I did that. And then I went to drive home and my car broke down because it was raining. It was like March and it was 33 degrees out.
Oh.
And so the guy that came to pick me up, the AAA guy that I called, he said, all I can do is take you to the station. I can't take you home. And I was 50 miles from home. Wow. So what I had to do was I called my cousins, I called my family, I called my roommates. Mm-hmm. Nobody answered the phone, and I ran out of money.
Oh, geez.
So then I had to hitchhike or walk, and I started hitchhiking, and nobody would pick me up. And so I started walking, and I just was walking, and all of a sudden this car stopped. And the passenger side door opened, and the guy said, "Get in. You won't be able to talk, but it's okay." And I got in, and I couldn't talk right away. And he said,
"Why couldn't
if
you talk?"
Because I almost had hypothermia.
Oh wow!
From the 33 degrees.
Yeah. Okay.
So he said, "If you're going to go this way, and I'm going this way, just motion me." And then I was able to talk, and we started talking, and he said, "Oh, I'm going about halfway, and then you're going to have to go the other way, and I'm going to go this way." And he got to that point, and he looked at me, and he said, "Oh, my God, I'm going to drive you to your door." And he drove me home.
Oh,
and,
God,
when
how
I
nice.
Got out of my car, when I got out of his car, and I went to went by his door, his window, he said, "Just take care of people the way I took care of you."
Wow. Wow. That's a wonderful story. And on that note, we have to end. But what a wonderful story it ended on. Do you take that as a supernatural, as a kindness, as a...
Well, what is- I took it as more than you would expect. And yes, it was a kindness, whether it was a human being or not.
Or an angel.
Or an angel. It didn't matter to me because the message is very clear.
Mm-hmm. It really
is. You know, to do what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. And have you taken care of people the way he took care of you?
I've tried, yes, best I could.
Yeah, good to know, right?
Yeah.
Good. Well, thanks so much. We're actually coming to the close, and I want to make sure everybody knows where to get your book and where to get hold of you if they can get hold
okay.
of you.
Okay. So my book is Developing Your Supernatural Awareness, Connecting to an Interactive Universe. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any bookstore. It's
and metaphysical stores as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, any store that sells books.
Yeah. And how about you? Can they get hold of you directly? Or do you want that?
The best way to get a hold of me, if somebody needs to for some reason, would be drfwoodat@hushmail.com.
Okay, great. Are you still working as a psychologist?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So if anybody needs you out there and has a weird thing that they're looking to tell somebody,
well,
red, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being on the show. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it, too. Maybe we can do it again down the road.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for Metaphysics, A View Through the Veil. Please tune in for another edition with your host, Barb Crowley, next Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time and 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Enjoy your upcoming weekend.